What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Yala, your thrice weekly podcast where we talk about the hottest news with a touch of what, Terrence?
Good old humor.
Good old humor, man.
Yes.
The week is just beginning. How's your weekend, man?
Nice. It was nice. Had a couple of, there were a lot of people who came across our account over the weekend because of our recent interviews with Jamus Lim and with Xuan. So I was just basking in the social media glory of like the likes and the verified people liking our posts and everything. Shiok ah. It's them shiok ah.
It's them shiok
lah. How about you? Were you following that?
I was. But I didn't bask in it because it was going more viral on Instagram than TikTok.
And I deal more with the Instagram stuff. You're the TikToker.
I'm the TikToker. So you and your collabs are the Instagram collabs. Walao, eh.
Connecting with people.
Going crazy, man.
Connecting with other souls on Instagram. You're just like TikToking around us.
Just TikToking. TikToking cannot collab. So then like, and some people like Jamus doesn't have a TikTok account.
Correct, yes.
Or at least I couldn't find.
Yeah. And we've also discovered over time that the audience on Instagram and TikTok are looking for very different things as well.
Yeah.
And audience, we don't talk about the Yala Bat audience per se, but in general, right?
Yeah.
I feel like Instagram, it's much more about yourself and your emotions and how stuff makes you feel. What do you feel about? What does TikTok do? What do people react to on TikTok?
I mean, of course, a lot of anger stuff.
Okay.
They just go there to be either very positive or very angry. But just over this course of the weekend, feels like Instagram is a more likable platform, eh?
For you?
I don't know. It feels like it's more welcoming, less binary. Like TikTok is very, it feels very mechanical.
Okay.
Whereas Instagram, as much as I hate to say it, feels got a bit more
soul.
Oh my God, am I saying that?
Yeah.
A bit more soul.
I think you're affected by the fact that TikTok might be banned in a year already.
I don't think so, man. No, but you don't feel it? Like, I mean, okay, maybe the collab thing and just like feels like, okay, there's... And maybe it's also partly because it tends to be less angry stuff on Instagram. I don't know. But you got any feelings?
Instagram is just chugging along, right? Doing the thing. And it's kind of like, you know, now that TikTok is on this like collision course with the US lawmakers and all that you know, in 9 to 12 months, even if just TikTok, Instagram just rides it out and just does its thing.
Survive, lah.
It'll be the winner, right?
Yeah, it'll be the winner.
Yeah, so that's the crazy thing. Now they just don't rock the boat too much. Don't do anything that pisses people off so much that they jump ship, right? And they'll still be here to fight the next battle.
Yeah, man. So Zuckerberg, like, if TikTok really does get banned, like, Zuckerberg, he's just stood the test of time, man.
Yeah. That's
crazy.
It's quite interesting.
Crazy. Yeah. But yeah, interesting.
But what do you think of, like, supposing there'll be a lot of new people listening to this, possibly, because they only just discovered us on Instagram or TikTok. What do you have to say to them, like in terms of, like, to welcome them?
First of all, I hope they're listening to the whole podcast and not just staying for the clips.
Yes.
But if you are here, welcome. We've been doing this for quite a while. So this is the format we normally do it. And hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, I say kudos to anyone who's here listening to us talk already.
Yeah.
Because I already start to see comments on YouTube where people are like, hey, the first 10 minutes of this podcast, like, don't even need it, lah. They're literally saying what we're talking about, like banter.
It's fucking useless.
Asking about weekends, useless. Get to the meat of it. And I think that's the thing about podcasts. It's not, we don't deliver stuff in like these bite-sized 60-second or 90-second things. It's really about the experience of coming here, feeling like you're catching up with your friends, and then you talk about stuff going on,
and it's an intellectual warm up, lah. You know, before you go for a run, you don't just go like fucking 20 kilometers an hour. Warm up.
It's intellectual foreplay. That's what we're engaging in now. Like,
exactly.
Intimacy at scale.
Intellectual foreplay. Intimacy at scale. You know, get your mind ready. Because I'm guessing some of our more regular listeners, they already know the first few minutes is like, okay, you click play. We'll give you a bit of time to settle it. You know, like if I listen to the BBC podcast every day, the moment start, like fucking 0 to 100 already. You know. But for us, no, we let you warm up, man. Get you a little ready, a little ready.
Yeah, because this is not just a record of like what happens. It's a record of what's it like living in Singapore? Mm. We talk about the weather. We talk about stuff going on. We talk about what, you know, accidents, literally talk about people, accidents on the road and stuff like that, right? So yeah, that's the part of the beauty of podcast. So if you're here and you're experiencing this for the first time and it's so jarring to you that people can spend 10 minutes talking about it, it is what it
Sorry,
is.
Sorry, man.
You might want to check out some other podcasts or something that where they jump straight into the meat, or they give you like, 10 minutes of it, of all the best bits up front, right? We don't do that.
No. We give you maybe 20 seconds and then a warm up, and then we dive straight into it. So now coming to the end of the stretching, really, the warm up. So before we get ready for the run, what's the last thing we need to do?
So if you're new here, please try your best to, you know, try following, subscribing, and give it a few podcasts, if anything, if you want to get to know us better. I think there's a big community of people who have done what you are doing now, who have trodden this path before, and they're still here, you know, years later. 519
So it's 520 like this one.
19, this 519, I believe.
Oh, 500. I believe, yeah. Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So, and also, if you hear us and you are wondering what the hell do these people look like, just come over to YouTube, man.
Yeah.
Come over to YouTube, subscribe. Same goes with all the social media. And if you want to work with us, you can reach us at ministryoffunny.com, our website. You can put in a little note. We will get it and we will reply as soon as we can.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Cool. Oh, this is 520.
Oh, 520. Okay.
520. All right.
Yep.
Cool. The first topic.
Yes.
It's not something that would affect everybody, but felt interesting, given that within the financial sector, this seems to have caused some seismic repercussions.
Seismic.
I had a thought before I said it. I was like, okay, let me say it correctly. Seismic. Seismic repercussions. And it is the news that the Bank of Singapore has taken action against employees for apparently misusing their medical benefits. And they have let go about up to 40 employees last week. This first broke on April 24th by a career portal called efinancialcareers.com.
Yeah.
Were you aware of that website?
No.
Apparently, it's quite well known.
Apparently, for financial careers.
For financial careers.
And it makes sense that they would have first dibs on this information, since I guess people go there to, you know, look for work and everything.
Financial careers.
Yeah, financial services.
So, it has gotten a bit more steam now, because, laying off people is never nice news.
Mm.
But the fact that, I guess, misusing of benefits, especially for banks, is always going to come under the spotlight. So, before we talk about it, when did you hear about this thing bubbling up?
I think sometime last week, in the middle of last week already, it was already out there. And I think, some friends of mine that in the space, financial services space, just mentioned it casually kind of thing. But that's about it. That's about my experience with it.
But when your friends mentioned it, were they like, wow, this is terrible? Or what's the big deal?
I don't think it's that big a deal. But I think in those conversations, I come to realize that actually, layoffs have been happening at banks for a while, even before this tech winter and everything like that. It's just that they're not publicized. And they're happening constantly. They're not publicized. And they happen in small numbers. This one maybe because it's 40 people and it's to do with medical insurance claims. Yeah. So I think it's a little bit more of a hoo-ha.
And those are the people who got let go, because apparently up to 800 people were investigated, 800 or 900 people.
Yeah.
So just the context, the Bank of Singapore, first of all, is the private banking arm of OCBC, which I didn't know before. Do you know that?
Yeah, I knew that.
So it's the BOS, right?
Yeah. I think the bigger thing was that I believe OCBC, I believe they bought over the private banking arm of a Dutch bank or something like that, ING maybe.
Oh.
And then they actually had the rights to the Bank of Singapore name from back in the day, which had been laying dormant for a long time.
Mm.
And I believe they took that and then they applied it to this new private banking
arm.
This was 10, 12, 15 years ago, something.
But there was no backlash towards the name, Singapore Theatre Company.
A little bit, yeah.
There was.
I remember there was a little bit of hey, how come this bank can, take out a name that sounds so official, almost like Central Bank of Singapore. But at the end of the day, it's a private banking arm, so it's not exactly like mass market B2C kind of thing. Mm. So you're not going to hear a lot of scams going through the Bank of Singapore.
Oh, yeah, like,
yeah.
So basically, what happened, right, the details of the case, apparently in 2023, there were a bunch of employees who claimed a bunch of things for stuff that apparently was not claimable. And it seems like they did it mainly through this one clinic that was not on the panel of doctors that was part of Bank of Singapore's medical insurance coverage. And it was just an email from the clinic, which has been named. It is the Dr. Thompson and Thompson, is it?
Yeah.
Dr. Thompson and Thompson.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's the names of detectives in Tintin.
The twin detectives in
Tintin. Oh, I never read Tintin.
Oh, you never read
Tintin. Yeah, Dr. Thompson and Thompson.
Yeah, the classic. Yeah.
Classic. So there was an email from them that talked about them not going to be reimbursing any more claims from the employees of BOS. And that kicked off the investigation, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, what I understand, like, there was this clinic that's not on a panel of doctors, which means that you still have to pay up front and then you claim.
Yeah.
Right? If it's on a panel, of your company's medical insurance, you go there and you just pays it, right?
Yeah.
So this one, BOS also has this policy that for claims below $200, you don't need to produce like a receipt or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there were a bunch of people who were claiming for stuff like bird's nest.
I don't know whether I need to have a receipt, but doesn't need to be itemized.
Or doesn't need to be itemized.
Yeah. So maybe it's only receipt. Need you just receipt. Don't need to list out exactly what you got.
That means like of the $210 for this,
It
can just be, I don't know, consultation.
Consultation fees, $199, right?
Okay, cool. So, what seems to be the case, because even looking on Reddit, this clinic apparently like has a retail store where people just go in. I know one Redditor called it like the mama shop of clinics. So, seems like people have just been going there, getting stuff and claiming it and getting reimbursed. And I think for BOS stuff, they can claim up to $10,500 worth for dental and medicine.
Yeah.
Which is quite a big amount. I don't know whether that's per year or not.
Per year, yeah.
Oh, it's per year.
Yeah.
Fuck. So the 40 people who let go, maybe they were really claiming to the max.
Yeah.
But the fact is the claims were going through and they were getting the money back.
Yeah, that's right.
And apparently, some of the staff who were let go, they said they had reimbursed. They paid back whatever claims they got. They got their bonuses last year canceled.
Yeah.
And any promotions also canceled. And then now still cannot let go. So, at the crux of it, what are your thoughts, Terrence? Given that you also have experience in the finance industry?
Yeah. So, I think it goes to that discussion that we're having before this. Like, what is the yalla butt in this whole topic, right? And I think the big thing to me is what you just mentioned about the employees, that they've already reimbursed whatever the insurance claims and everything. They already forfeited bonuses and promotions last year. And they didn't get that sweet, sweet $1,000 payout that OCBC gave all its junior employees last year, right? That
for we talked cost to of living, right?
Yeah. Which was quite widely lauded as this nice gesture, right? So apparently these staff didn't get it. And then they, now after investigations and all, they still got fired. And so the question is, was it fair, right? Is it fair to have taken all those actions and then still lay off these staff, right? Because ultimately, were they cheating the bank? Or were they, was someone committing insurance fraud? That's the bigger question, right? If you're an employee and you don't know better, and you just know that you can claim certain things, and you go to a place and you make some claims, and it turns out that place actually is not approved, or the stuff that they sell you actually cannot be claimed properly, does it mean that you've committed, a sin against the bank, or is it the clinic that has committed the insurance fraud, so to speak?
Or just a loophole, right?
Yeah.
Something that was missed out in the policy.
Yeah, yeah.
And neither party detected it.
Yeah.
So should it just be on the shoulders of the employee?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know what happened to the clinic, right? I don't think they can be penalized or anything because they are not already part of the panel.
Yeah.
So in this case, I mean, like looking at it, I know like at least one friend messaged me saying that, this is a ethical issue. That as an employee, like, it is in some way fraudulent.
Yes, yes.
You're exploiting a loophole.
If they tell you that, oh, you can't use this to buy, like, bird's nest or toothpicks, yeah, and you still do, right?
Yeah.
And then you claim it under medical consultation services, like we mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But apparently, like, that was clarified that you cannot do, like, a bird's nest or anything.
Yeah, but then some people still did.
Some people still did.
Yeah, so that's clearly fraudulent, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, this one, okay, so looking at even my own experience, I mean, the first company I worked at, the claim policies were not the best. But I do recall certain friends who maybe when they are traveling or if I'm abroad and all, and they get like the meal allowance, right? They will include like the meal of a friend or something.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that one, I guess that is also fraudulent to a certain extent.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know. So these kind of things, on one hand, I'm like, okay, I don't think this is only a OCBC or BOS thing. But it seems like Bank of Singapore took the hardest stance. And I feel like, I wouldn't say blanket, like everyone is guilty of fraud. But probably some of them are, in the cases like what you said, like they knowingly know that these things are not claimable.
Yeah.
And then they couch it in just consultation fees or medicine.
They have to find a clinic that is comfortable helping them to do that, right?
Yeah.
And it seems like there is that particular clinic in the CBD area that does that.
Yeah.
So it kind of incriminates everyone who goes to that clinic, right?
Mm.
But, I mean, do you feel that if they already reimbursed whatever, I mean, at the end of the day, if you want to give people benefit of the doubt, they could still say they didn't read the fine print of the insurance state terms and conditions, which, honestly, how many people actually read the fine print of these things, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times, even if you read the fine print, there's always some gray areas you're not sure. That even when you buy travel insurance or something, you're not 100% sure everything that you do will be covered, right? So let's say it's a very innocent mistake, right? And someone buys something and then, they say you can claim it. Then, I'll just take it back and claim it. Then they discover there's this error. And then they proceed to pay the bank back and they proceed to, I'm not going to get bonus because I fucked this up.
Mm.
Do you think it's fair that they still got fired? Even if assuming that their intention was entirely genuine.
Intention meaning the...
They made a genuine mistake. It was a mistake. Yeah, it wasn't like they weren't trying to defraud the bank. It was just a one-off thing.
Yeah, I think if that's the case, then getting fired is harsh. But I assume, based on the article, they said hundreds were investigated, 40 got let go.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming the 40 were really like, okay, let's find a way to maximize all 10.5K's worth. And if that's the case, then I think the company has a right to take a stance. And I don't think it's... The only thing that I don't think is that harsh to let them go on grounds of ethics. But then if you make them pay back, you do the bonus takeaway, then you fire. It felt like that's a bit, I mean, Yeah, I think even if you fire, you would probably want to claw back and you won't get the bonus. So regardless of order, I don't think that's that harsh.
I think it's fair. It's fair because... ultimately, there was investigations and everything that seemed to have taken a while. And like what you said, because they had such a loophole of the $200 limit, right, where you didn't have to itemize items. You do it once, I think, maybe possibly you can close one eye. But if you keep doing it multiple times, then you know that there's something afoot, right?
Yeah.
It states that there's an intention to continually use a loophole. If they investigate properly, they should be able to dig up all the times, number of times you visited this particular one clinic and did that. Right?
Yeah.
And they say they can't comment because it's a private staff affair and all, but if they investigate hundreds and only fired 40 or fired double digit numbers of employees, means that, these people are probably the most egregious loopholers, if anything.
Loopholers.
I also want to talk about this because it's an interesting discussion given what's going on in the court case now with Iswaran and all, right? Where if it was one musical or one item,
one bicycle,
one bicycle, that one bicycle very expensive, but a musical or a football match.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, like, it was an A mistake. But when you keep doing it repeatedly, that's when people are like, hey, something's off, even though it's not a huge amount, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Total.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the biggest thing that this impacts are the employees who did not do anything wrong. Because, you know, the one question, one criticism that is applicable across so many things in life, even down to government policies, right, is like, sometimes policies can be very overbearing.
Yeah.
And there's almost a lack of trust, right?
Yeah.
And everybody wants to be left alone, to have the powers that be, to trust them to manage their own things. Yeah. In this case, I mean, like for BOS to say below 200, you don't need to itemize, there's a certain element of trust they're putting in their employees, right? And the people who fuck it up, I can imagine after this, suddenly they say, okay, now anything only below $50, no need to itemize. So all the people who've been following and all, they lose out.
Yeah.
And I think that is why, like, the more we talk about it, it feels like, yeah, letting them go, it is a good stance to take as a company.
Yeah,
because, wow, like, I mean, I can totally see some people really calculating. It's like people who maximize miles, right? Wow, the lengths they go to, some of them are just damn, they get it.
Yeah.
And I can imagine the same thing happening for this.
Yeah. And I think some people online were stating also that $200 as a upper limit, it's very generous. If anything, maybe they should have just brought it down to 50 or something. In line with what? Now we know civil servants have to declare anything above $50, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in line with that, I think it's also safe to ask people to, if your medical cost above $50, you got to declare what items it is, right?
Yeah.
Cause $200 can you can get a lot for $200, you know, like just in terms of like bird's nest or just general stuff around the house and all.
Yeah. I mean, even like some medications, okay, antibiotics, no. But even if like paracetamol and all, right? I saw some people online saying paracetamol's cheap.
Yeah.
But if you get like 10 packets,
yeah,
right, for free.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody has a stash of Panadol at home, right?
Yeah.
It just felt like,
yeah.
This one is spoiling market to the max, man.
Spoiling market,
Spoiling market.
Ruining it for everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you do get certain quotes in articles saying that, I think there was one person who said that, you know, he already paid back, he forfeited his bonus, but now he's been let go, which is going to affect his work, career options going forward. What do you think of something like that?
Yeah, just too bad. I think you got to... It always starts with... I think that there was one show that I watched that was really quite telling about this whole kind of thing. It was a Hugh Jackman movie, Bad Education. Really great movie. I think you can find it on HBO or what, but it wasn't very widely publicized because it came out during the pandemic. But it was about, it was a US high school teacher or high school administrator who, basically defrauded the school's accounts and everything, you know, to the tunes of like huge amounts of money. But I think there's one point in the movie where they state that it really just started with a donut, where they realized like, I didn't bring cash with me to pay for this donut. Why don't I try using the school card? And used it. And the following week, there was no questions about it. Then it became from one donut to, you know, a meal. And then from a meal, it grew into something else. So yeah, these things start with probably one time, like someone tells them, hey, why don't you just try this, use this, and then just claim. And then after that, it just snowballs into bigger things. And those are the kinds of people that, if your organization also looking at employees, you also need to be a bit careful, right? Because especially like a bank or something where governance, corporate governance is super important, right? And you're dealing with customers' money and all. You can't deal with any kind of misuse of financial benefits.
So I mean, if you swap out certain words in your lush pill, it's the perfect anti-vape ad.
Anti-vape.
You say it all starts with a donut, right? It all starts with one vape. Then one soon you become a heroin addict. So I mean,
slippery slope.
So I mean, in this case, I also saw some comments saying, you know, if one person does it, it's cheating. If 100 people do it, it's a system's problem. Do you agree with that?
But it doesn't mean that the people who did it should be absolved of blame or anything at all, right? Just because there's a loophole and it exists doesn't mean that all the people who did it should be spared of any consequences, right? It's like, I mean, the like how the, you know, there were Nazi soldiers, right, who were charged for war crimes, in spite of a lot of them just saying that I was just following orders, right, from the government or to do what I did. But you still charge these individuals for war crimes. Right?
I mean, if you just think about an example, when you see all those protests, right, and they break down a store, right, and people go in and take, I would consider those people as like theft, right? And if you take it even to the extreme, someone is getting beaten up by a bunch of people, you go in there and throw one punch. Right. It doesn't change it. It's not a system problem. It's not, there's no security guards around this person. Yeah. So, okay, that person's problem. If 100 people are beating up this person, it's fine. If it's one person, then it's a fight. So that kind of argument also, you're like, that's why I'm curious how this is taken or being seen in the finance industry. Because just looking at comments online, of course, taken with a pinch of salt because comments will always be comments. These kind of things, like they are not like, I would imagine every corporate that has generous insurance policies would be subject to this kind of abuse. I don't know how employees or people who have benefited from that see this. Is it, too bad they got caught. They never space it out enough, you know.
Maybe,
right. Because I can totally see some people saying, you know, I'm working in this company, they are providing this thing, and not say rules are meant to be broken, but if you're not doing anything wrong, if you're not harming anyone, bank got so much money, what's the problem?
It gets quite ugly. I think my experience working in the US and all, the relationship between insurers, the medical industry and the companies and all, it's just reached this kind of ridiculous point where there's a lot of, I would say there's quite a lot of abuse of the system, even by the medical community as well, in terms of pushing you to take up treatments or signing up for packages and things that you wouldn't normally associate with seeing a doctor, right? You know, being made to go and sign a package and things like that. But by that, it happened to me.
Package for doctors?
To say, you have some issue with your shoulder or back or something, then you go and see a chiropractor or something like that. This is a very hard sell. I remember going and it was very hard sell for me to sign up for full package of chiropractic services, and being pushed to do x-rays and injections and stuff like that when I didn't feel like it was so bad that I needed all that. And then later getting a shock when the bill came and then the insurance company calling me asking me what the hell's just happened, did I get into some accident or something like that. Why suddenly, got all these charges or injections and all these things, you know?
Oh.
So it just opened my eyes to the system there is so incentivized so strangely. So it's so skewed towards just maximizing your insurance coverage and all. That it's become a systemic thing already. I wasn't trying to defraud the insurance or anything, but I was really having some shoulder or back issues or something.
But you got injection for that?
Yeah. First session, doctor's I recommend getting this injection.
Check where?
He just said to numb the area a little bit so it's easier to check and everything. So, and you're you don't know better, right? You're just a patient and you're just having a stiff neck and everything.
And I mean, I'm guessing it happens in Singapore also because someone I know a few months ago had some back problem.
Yeah.
Went to a physio and the physio said, we need to inject this into your spine.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think more often than not, people want to avoid invasive things, right? But this person was like, I think I'm going to go for it. Then I was like, are you fucking crazy?
Yeah.
You haven't even gone for physio. You haven't tried yoga, Pilates and all. You want to inject your spine.
Yeah.
So in the end, thankfully, he didn't do it. I can imagine. That's why, private hospitals is always going to be this balance. And at the end of the day, especially for insurance, when people do that, then ultimately the premiums will have to increase.
Yeah.
Because that's the business model for insurance companies, right? They charge you based on their own sustainability as well. So, man, it's 40 people.
Yeah.
I wonder to what extent they really try to exploit the loophole.
Yeah, but we probably won't get more. I mean, because it's not public, right? They're not a public agency or anything.
But then the other banks, no other bank, or at least publicly, has been said to have laid off people because of this. So, I mean, Bank of Singapore.
But to my earlier point, what I've heard is that, the layoffs are happening. It's just that you don't hear about them because they do it in small batches. So, we'll see. Maybe if there are any more big layoffs, Maybe it'll come on the news.
I hope it's also not the case that Bank of Singapore needed to lay off some people. They're like, okay, who has fucked up? Who has fucked up? These people paid back already. They did not. Actually, we should let them go. Then we kill two birds with one stone.
It's possible, right? We don't know. We don't know. That's the thing.
We don't know.
I mean, hopefully, in the interest of a bit more transparency also. Because it's such a public thing already, right?
Yeah.
To also maybe reveal a bit more details.
We don't know.
Yeah. Mm. But speaking of absolving oneself of responsibility, our next topic is also about a bunch of people who are absolving themselves of responsibility, but in a much smaller scale and closer to home, closer to your family.
Mm.
What is this group of people?
It is the news via Stomp, I guess, as a source of news, that a parent was appalled that his 14-year-old daughter actually spent a night in a hotel room with two other girls and a room full of boys.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a picture that I think this Stomper posted.
Mm.
And, he very publicly said that as parents, we are deeply concerned and disappointed that such events were allowed at a Sentosa hotel, endangering the lives of our children and exposing them to substance and physical abuse. Because apparently, in the photo, there are visible alcohol bottles.
Yeah.
And apparently, vaping also occurred. So, a police report was lodged. Investigations are ongoing. Basically, the parents' complaints is, if I were to sum up, is that how did the hotel allow this to happen? And the hotel said, just visibly also from the number of people in the room, that is not allowed. So, why do you want to talk about this, Terrence?
Because there's a bit of a debate going on, a yalla butt kind of debate going on,
Where
people online are saying that it's not the hotel's fault. It's the parents' fault for poor parenting and allowing this to happen.
Mm.
Allowing the daughter to even have a sleepover, 14-year-old daughter, have a sleepover and everything. And not picking her up at like midnight or something like that. So he's trying to, a lot of people online are saying he's trying to place the blame and even do like a public service announcement for parents. But essentially he's sort of like telling the world that he's not a very good parent himself.
But Terrence, what were you doing when you were 14?
I wasn't in hotel rooms. I wasn't. I don't think I was drinking alcohol yet. At that point, no. I wasn't. Not so happening. I mean, I'm sure there were chalets and stuff like that. But because I was in a boys' school, it was just that. A boys, bunch of boys staying in a chalet.
Talking about girls.
Don't even know there was that much talking about girls. Because that time was about watching football or doing other things, doing stupid stuff, but not so much about girls.
When I was 14 also, I mean, same all boys school.
Yeah.
And it just felt like girls felt like exist in a different dimension.
Correct.
So this one, I'm like, oh shit, hanging out in hotels already. Some more Sentosa Hotel, which probably not the cheapest hotel.
Yeah.
Right. So, but okay, going back to what the parents said, because he at first didn't, he wanted his daughter to come back early.
Mm.
But then the daughter stayed a while. And then I think at about 1, at 2 a.m., the daughter and her friends informed him that they wanted to sleep in the hotel. Then he asked her to send her a picture of the group to be sure.
No, I think initially, before that, they were initially asking to stay later first, right? A couple more hours at midnight.
They wanted to, they were supposed to leave around midnight. Then they asked to stay a while more.
Because a parent would send her home by car, right?
Yeah, a friend's, one of her friend's parents.
Yeah.
Then when the doctor called at 2, the parent asked for a photo, and somehow he managed to see the photo the next morning. Because the parent went to the hotel, opened the door, and took the picture. So the one that you see on Stomp was taken by the parent. And the picture online, it has labeled, the Jack Daniel's whiskey bottle, the Korean soju, and even put the number 14 on the three people who were 14 years old.
Correct. No, but I think you missed out one part.
Which part?
Where basically at 2 a.m., the guy's daughter said that she wanted to stay in a hotel with three other girls. Then he asked her to send a picture of the group. And then she made excuses not to do so. So he called the hotel to check on the room. And then apparently the hotel tells him that they have a 4 guest maximum per room policy, right? Mm. And then the daughter told him that, there were 7 or 8 boys in another room. And the four girls that she was, the three girls that she was with, they were in a separate room. And it was just those four girls in that room, apparently.
Mm, mm.
But it was the next morning that the parent, a parent took a photo of what was actually happening and then sent it to him. That was when he discovered that all of them were in the same room.
And apparently, Siloso Beach, when they were contacted, they said that, they went to check. They enforced the hotel policy and required the guests to leave the premises. And apparently, the guests left at 3:15 a.m. But when the parent came back the next morning, the extra guests were still there. So maybe back. That's why the parent thought, hey, we already told the hotel, but in the morning, the people were still there. So when you take that into consideration, I think maybe his point got a bit more validity.
That the hotel did not enforce.
So maybe, like, or at face value, I was like, and a lot of people online also were saying, well, this guy's a horrible parent and all. I also know that if you don't have kids, it's very difficult to just say how difficult bringing up kids are. Right? So in this case, if they did tell the hotel, and the hotel said the guests left around 3:15 a.m., how come the guests were there, Terrence?
They snuck back in. Seems like they illegally snuck back in.
They simply walked through the main hotel entrance, which wasn't locked.
When he asked his daughter, she said that they walked through the main hotel entrance. But, I mean, he has... I guess there's something to complain about, right? That the hotel allowed so many people into the room. But there are a lot of things that jump out as a parent here, right?
Mm.
That his daughter lied to him, obviously, right? That there was alcohol and apparently vaping at this party that they were going to. Aren't those bigger worries for a parent than the hotel having to enforce this 4% thing? Because even if they enforce some 4% thing, would it be okay that there's alcohol and vaping in the room? No, right? Still, it's not appropriate for teenager, right? So it doesn't matter the number of people in the room, right? The number of people in the room, of course, safety issues, whatever, but the bigger points of lying about, who she was there with or what, whether they were sharing a room and all that, plus the alcohol and vaping, those are bigger concerns that the hotel has no control over, right?
Because they can't, so there's one thing that I don't know. If a hotel staff sees a clearly visible minor consuming alcohol, are they at liberty to stop the person?
I'm sure, because if something happens on their premises.
So in this case, they probably hit the bottles. So then the other question is, are they wrong to not have anyone at the reception where people can just walk in? That is dangerous.
Security issue.
Is a security issue.
So
I guess the hotel is not completely absolved. The parent kind of shot himself in the foot by publicly making it seem like it's only the hotel's fault. But I can also imagine as a parent, I'm guessing when you were 14 or 15, did you also do this kind of thing where you told your parent one thing and then another thing,
I'm sure everybody has at some point in their lives, But I think the bigger thing is, this parent seems to want to make it like a...
purely hotel.
Public service announcement to parents that he's protecting them, their kids from illegal things happening in the hotel. When actually most of the illegal stuff happening was actually planned by the group of friends that she was with.
You go Indian destination wedding, also all the aunties will always gather in one room. Whatever aunties do in a room. And it's definitely not three people. Right? Even there might be multiple rooms, but all the aunties will gather, all the cousins will gather, all the uncles will gather. So this one, it does feel like he's trying to push too much to the hotel.
And I don't know, maybe it's like a cognitive dissonance thing, believing that your daughter is always innocent and wanting to blame everyone else. Because I think people are pointing out that's the problem with a lot of parents these days, that it's not their kids' fault, it's everyone else's fault except their kids. Teachers, the system, the school, or things like that, And that's why people link it to a lot of reasons that they don't like they feel that the younger generation feel very entitled. What do you think of all that?
Anecdotally, I can totally see that happening.
Yeah.
Even for adults, not just about parents and their kids, even for adults, sometimes you meet like a grown ass person in their 40s and they clearly did something fucked up, but somehow it's never their fault. And I think, I mean, I hope I don't come across as that person to anyone. I hope, because I could see your face really thinking like, hey, Harish, you know, those who live in glass houses shouldn't
throw stones.
But I think everybody knows that people are, and I don't know whether it's a culture thing now or whether like there are more ways to blame other people, but this one feels like, wow, like, beyond a certain point. And someone, he posted it on Stomp.
Yeah, that's right.
So clearly not the most aware how this is going to come across. But as a parent, for you, how you fight against the desire to just not see your kid as being guilty in any situation?
I mean, I always go back to the anecdote that teacher friend was telling us about how, you know, sometimes being close to the students or the parents of the students, you know, gives you a lot of added stress and responsibility. In the sense that, you know, being there for your students means if they need to contact you on WhatsApp or something to ask about homework or that, you know, they're available, right, to be contacted over WhatsApp. But what if your group of students suddenly messages you at like midnight on Friday and they're taking a selfie and all their faces are flushed red and it's obvious that they've all been drinking alcohol. And these are secondary school students or whatever. They've been drinking alcohol together in public or whatever. They send that to you as a teacher, right? You know, if it's, then would immediately you're like, oh, as a teacher, am I complicit in like allowing that or should I be telling them not to do what they're doing, right? Yeah. And if a parent catches hold of this thing, oh, the teacher knew that you my son was going out and getting drunk with all his friends on a Friday night and you didn't do anything, then you get blamed for it, right? Mm. So immediately, there is a double-edged sword, the idea of like the teachers and all being, you know, accountable to the parents and always being present for students.
Mm.
Very tough job, And I just hearing her stories, I'm like, it makes me like, okay, I think we have to try to see also that the teachers also are operating within, you know, their limits also, right?
Mm.
And to try and foist all your expectations on them as a parent and all, it's tough, And I've seen it, I've seen it in even at like the really preschool level where certain parents do, I feel that certain things that they expect out of the teachers is a bit much, much. I mean, considering that how much each teacher really has to handle. I'm not saying that I don't expect certain things of the school, that you absolve them of all kind of responsibility. But when it comes to morals, ethics and stuff like that, I think a lot of that starts at home, right?
Mm.
Yeah. And it starts with like conversations with the kid. And it's very difficult conversations. And that's why for me also over the years, I've kind of realized like there is an appropriate age to discuss certain topics. And sometimes it's not that I disagree with what has been being discussed. I agree, you know, like, say more sensitive issues like LGBT issues and things like that. But when do you bring it up to a child? That I think still requires a level of discretion, because if you force it upon a child, you know, who's not ready to deal with these topics, or a parent and a child that are not ready to have a discussion, you're immediately making it their problem to solve without their consent, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, aside from LGBT issues, I think we spoke about, like, even the MOE curriculum when they talked about Israel, Gaza, and things like that, and sort of, like, where primary and secondary school students were being made to discuss these topics, very sensitive topics in school, with or without parents' consent, I'm not very sure, right?
Mm.
My question is, like, is it age appropriate? And so my views on that have become a bit more, maybe a bit more conservative, where you don't just want to open the can of worms for the kid to go and figure it out themselves. There's a really an age there where it's a bit more appropriate for them to deal with it.
And I mean, you know, like talking about, you were saying about how just understanding the constraints faced by teachers has made you also realize, okay, as a parent, can't just be all on the teacher. I think in this case, as a parent, in his defense, I would imagine, just looking at when I was growing up, so you can have all, your parents can do all the right things, but if you happen to meet company that is, maybe goes against what your parents are teaching you, that can be very influential as well.
Mm.
For all we know, he might be the best parent ever.
Yeah.
But however his daughter kind of met this group, there, they also can influence.
Yeah.
And I mean, right now, we don't know whether there was anything aside from vaping or alcohol they were doing. Maybe they were vaping and talking about politics, you know, like the macroeconomic policies of Singapore and how it's affecting the future for our generation. We don't know.
But still nothing innocent because it's all illegal.
Yeah, it's true.
Drinking
it's all
alcohol, that's underage
all vaping.
All vaping, that's illegal.
That is true.
So it doesn't matter what they were talking about or how innocent the play was.
Yeah.
You're just sitting there playing card games or whatever. It's still not the right thing, right?
Yeah, still not the right thing. But yeah, bigger questions. Like this group of friends, like, I mean, how do you even get access to that alcohol also, right?
Yeah, I'm quite surprised. I mean, not say surprised, but even when I was like 17 or 18 or something like that, it was always like, whoa, it's so hard to get access.
Maybe just take from the parents' stash,
And then more, that is another issue. And it's quite funny because this photo that he posted, the stomp, he actually labeled the alcohol that you can see in the photo. And he points out the top right corner, there's Korean soju.
Yeah.
Soju, Korean. And then bottom right, Jack Daniel's whiskey.
Yeah.
It's like crime scene at that, the way he labeled it.
Terrence, just FYI, I said that exact thing 10 minutes
ago. Sorry. Yeah. I was not listening.
You were clearly not listening.
Yeah.
I also pointed out that there are numbers 14 on people who are age 14.
Oh, that one, I remember you saying it.
But the whiskey.
Because I think you just made the point about alcohol. Oh, well, they're just talking about politics. But I'm just saying that, it's already crimes were committed already.
See, this is like a juvenile version of the fraud of the bank. Mm-hmm. Right? There was a loophole.
Yeah.
And they found a way to exploit it.
Yeah. So many things went wrong. I mean, obviously illegal activities, but the loophole was the parent allowing the daughter to negotiate, staying over.
Mm.
And the other loophole is the hotel allowing so many people to come together, right? So don't know. This one is hard to say.
Less clear cut.
Systemic, as in, there's just so many things that went wrong here, right?
Yeah.
But now the police are involved, so no.
Oh man.
Not pleasant experience.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
But yeah, everyone doing naughty things these days.
Mm.
But just talking about more wholesome good things. What is your one short comment?
I mean, I don't know whether this is wholesome or not, but on Yalabot 518, where we talked about Shanmugam, his rebuttal to the Economist article and Singaporean workers threatening to quit if forced to return to office.
Mm.
There was a comment from on Reddit from Foxhound-19. Not often a commenter, but they mentioned, he mentioned that he couldn't remember which episode, but he recalls Harish sharing about peeing into dry ice.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Today, my RedMart order came with a pack of dry ice and I did the deed for the first time. It was heavenly.
Yeah.
So, I just want to clarify. Because Foxhound19 goes on to reply to another reply saying that it felt like it was peeing into clouds where it disappears into the smokes. That was how it was described during the episode, spot on. It sounds like, based on his first thing, right? I thought he just peed directly onto the dry ice.
Okay.
Which is totally not what I did. you throw the dry ice into the toilet bowl.
Yeah, so that really causes it.
The smoke. Based on his second comment, disappears into the smokes, I assume that he did the right thing. Anyone who's thinking about peeing onto dry ice direct, no, that is not what I said. It is just peeing into the cloud of condensation that is caused by the dry ice. So yeah. So I just found it funny that, of all the things that we talk about, that stuck with him.
Yeah. Maybe I want to do a demonstration on social media or something, how to do it properly.
Maybe. No, but have you tried it before? It really looks like you're peeing into a cloud, man.
I mean, I can imagine without doing
great.
It. Yeah,
it's great. I love it. That's my one short comment.
Cool. My one short comment is from YouTube, where someone just... it was a comment on our episode about the TikTok ban being real, right? So, Marty I guess it's GVANV. I don't even know how to pronounce that. But anyway, it says, filling my episodic comment for the one-shot comment. I just want to say there's a lot of foul language on this episode. And they say foul as in F-O-W-L because we're talking about chickens and eggs, right? Do note that it may offend other animals who are fans of the show. So that's the joke. So great episode. I love the balance of international news making changes on the serious level leading to a loss of revenue for companies on TikTok. Paired with an old school handwritten message, a topic about old school handwritten message from a home-based business offering delivery riders.
Oh.
So yeah, it's cool. Someone found poetry in the, even the selection of topics that we had.
What?
One was about international digital app, you know, TikTok. The other one was about a homeschool, home-based business and the handwritten messages to riders.
What?
Yeah, wow. Very, very poetic.
Plus a joke into throwing, a foul dead language. Joke. Yeah. Foul language.
That's right.
Cool.
Cool, cool, cool.
What about your one stroke thing, man?
You have yours? I just
pull
mine up, yeah.
So, like, I think many episodes ago, I think I mentioned my one stroke thing being this parkour exponent in Singapore.
Yeah.
Who goes by the handle D-Nester.
Yes.
And I mean, he does some craziest shit in HDB estates, you know, and he's damn athletic. So last week, he actually won second in an international parkour competition held in China.
Yeah.
And apparently, like, it brought like 80,000 spectators to the competition. So it's not a small thing. And he got second, man. So, yeah, shout out to him. Like, on his Instagram and TikTok, he really does some crazy ass shit on, like, it's nice to see HDB blocks being part of it. La.
And he's been doing it for a long time.
16 years, apparently. Yeah, yeah. Parkour for 16 years.
I remember even before TikTok everything, I was already watching his videos on YouTube.
Yeah. It's crazy. So, I mean, he won. It was like a circuit run, la, and he got second place for his timing. And you just see him go through it. Oh, allow it. It's crazy. So, yeah. Kudos to you, D-Nester.
Congrats to him, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. My one shop thing was is basically a new toy release. That just came out recently. Hasbro tied up with this robotics company called RoboSen, and they've released a few like self-transforming Transformer toys in recent years. One being Optimus Prime, then they did Grimlock, the dinosaur robot, right? And now they finally done a Megatron, self-transforming Megatron toy. So this one is it's pretty awesome because it transforms from. You know Megatron, the villain in the leader of the Decepticons, right? Transforms from being the robot into a tank. And it's pretty awesome. So the CNET did a review on it. And yeah, I mean, I just look at all these videos and it's just awesome. It's a, you know, if you talk about like technology and robots and what kind of joy it can bring you, I think this is it for me, you know? It's just really exciting to see how these toys are being created. Using you know, all the technology that we talk about today. Wow. Yeah.
And you can configure all the speed and stuff also.
Yeah. And you can voice, you interact via voice. You can ask it to transform. You can ask it to do stuff. So yeah, I mean, just crazy. It blows my mind, like, the toys that are available to kids these days. But I don't even think it's for kids. It's for serious collectors.
Yeah, I don't think kids will do that. Yeah,
way too expensive.
Wallah, that is cool.
But the self-transforming is pretty cool because not for this one, but for like the Grimlock one, he can transform between, you know, he can transform from a robot into a dinosaur, right? And the funny thing, the great thing, the amazing thing is that as a robot, he walks on his two legs. But then when he transforms to the dinosaur, he can also walk as a dinosaur.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So imagine how much goes into like the robotics of like having the same robot in two different forms of being able to walk. It's damn amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is dope, man.
Yeah.
Wow, but cool.
Cool, cool, cool.
Cool, cool, cool. All right. First episode of the week.
Yeah. This is a Labor Day week as well.
So Labor Day week.
Yeah. There's a bit of a break in the middle.
Yeah. Correct.
But we're still pushing out three.
Still pushing out three.
Yeah.
But yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. And remember, follow us on social media. Subscribe. Tell at least one person who may not have heard about us. And hope to see you guys on the next episode as well.
Yeah, and if you want to work with us, check out ministryoffunny.com. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Bye-bye.